The fourth Sunday of Easter is sometimes referred to as Shepherd Sunday. You probably noticed that the readings, the music, the hymns are all about shepherds. So, of course, the psalm of the day every year on this fourth Sunday of Easter is the 23rd Psalm, the most shepherdy of the shepherd psalms. We all know the power of this psalm and the peace and comfort it can bring, as well as the discomfort some of you might have felt hearing it this morning with less than familiar words. I have sat with those who are dying, or with those whose speech has been taken from them because of a stroke, as they begin to speak the words of this psalm with me as I start to read. I have seen others speechless at its reading as tears fall silently down their cheeks. More than any other passage of Scripture, this psalm comforts, reassures, strengthens, and gives us peace when we are seriously ill, troubled, dying, or grieving. It is the psalm that we turn to most at times of death. But the 23rd Psalm is not really about dying. It's about living. It has become a psalm to die by, but really, it's a psalm to live by. Like the Lord's Prayer and other passages of Scripture that we know by heart, it's easy to say and to hear the words of this psalm without putting a lot of thought into what we are saying. So on this Shepherd Sunday, I thought we might spend some time living with the 23rd Psalm and see what new or deeper meanings we might discover for life as well as for death. The psalm begins with those familiar words, "The Lord is my shepherd," a simple needlepoint worthy statement of trust in God. But the opening line is more than a slogan. It is a radical confession of faith. In the ancient Near East, a shepherd was more than just a common character from everyday life. It was also a well-known image for kings. Kings were the shepherds of their people. So when the people of Israel used this metaphor for God, they weren't just thinking of some idyllic pastoral scene with green grass and poofy clouds. Invoking the shepherd would have had political connotations as well. It was saying that God was king, that God was the ruler of the universe. Just as the affirmation that Jesus is Lord meant that Caesar was not, the 23rd Psalm puts all rulers and kings on notice. Rulers are supposed to provide for and protect their people, as a shepherd cared for and protected the sheep. Of course, they didn't always do so well with that job back then, and they don't do so well with that today. But the psalm is saying that God is a different kind of king. That's what the 23rd Psalm claims, and it is a bold claim to make. So the first thing that the 23rd Psalm says is a confession of radical faith and trust in God. The Lord is my shepherd. The Lord is the one in whom I place my trust, and no one else. And what happens when the Lord is your shepherd? The psalm tells us, "I shall not want." And believe me, that is something that really hits home for most of us. We shudder at the very idea of wanting for anything. Several years ago, I officiated at a wedding at a nearby country club. And when it was time for the couple to say the vows, I did what I always do. I spoke a phrase and then waited for them to repeat the words and say them to each other. The groom, who I was actually a little bit nervous about ahead of time, made it through just fine. But then it was the bride's turn to make her promises, to be a loving and faithful wife in good times and bad. And we came to that phrase of the marriage vows, "In plenty and it won't. So I said my part, and I paused, and I waited for the bride to look meaningfully into her husband's eyes and say the same. But instead, she simply said, "In plenty." Now, sometimes the bride and groom get nervous, and I need to repeat a line. No big deal. So I did. In plenty and in want. And this time, she sort of looked at me, and she said it again, with not a little anger in her voice. In plenty. I couldn't believe this was actually happening. But you'll be glad to know, I held my ground. And I caught the eye of the bride's mother, who was turning pale. And I said it once again. And this time, the bride finally complied. But I'm pretty sure she didn't mean it. Why should we want for anything? We've been conditioned to expect it all. So what does it mean to say, "With the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want"? It would be easy to take the same line as those prosperity preachers on TV who look into the camera and say in their slick voices, "Just claim the Lord as your shepherd and you'll have everything you want. Cars, houses, money, success." Turn on the TV this afternoon, they're preaching that message right now. Well, that does seem to be said, to seem to be what it says. But we all know that it isn't true. People of faith suffer hardship. They go hungry, they're unemployed, persecuted, have bad health. So what does it mean to say, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want"? Well, it's a declaration about what really matters, about who is really in charge, about what really means to life. A statement of confidence in the face of actual scarcity. That the Lord is the one who gives us everything we need for life. That with the Lord as our shepherd, we already have everything we need. And you know, in my experience, it seems like those who have the least, those who lack the most, are often the ones who really get this verse. Because often they are the ones who know better than most of us that they are indeed dependent on God. That what they do have is a blessing from God. And they believe that God will always be with them, sustaining them through thick and thin. This opening verse means that God is the source of our life and all that sustains it. Sometimes it takes a crisis or hard times or persecution for us to really get that ourselves. The next verses of the psalm build on the image of the shepherd and explain what it might look like, painting a picture for our imaginations. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. The people of Israel have a strong memory of learning this lesson through their years in the wilderness when God sent manna to sustain them. This is a powerful image for a people who have lived most of their lives in a desert, where green pastures and still waters are awfully hard to find. But there's more. The promise that the Lord restores our soul. The psalm is not talking about the soul as we usually think of it, as some part of you that lives on after you die. We've read that back into the psalm, because we've made this psalm all about death and dying. The psalm is not talking about life after death or about some kind of spiritual renewal in this life. The words literally mean, "He brought me back to life." Not in the sense of resurrection, but in the sense of being rescued. Whatever trouble the psalmist has been through, this is a psalm of thanksgiving. Because God has restored the psalmist's very life. He has been rescued, saved. And what have we been saved for? To follow on the path of righteousness. Or as one translation puts it, to walk on the pathway of justice. So the psalmist's life is restored, saved, sustained, not just for his own sake, not merely for his personal relationship with God, but to live justly in the world for God's sake. It turns out that God has a stake in us. That's why our souls are restored. That's why we're brought back to life. We don't just live for ourselves. We live for God's glory and to carry out God's purpose in the world. It's a pretty good job description for the church, when you think about it. But trying to carry out God's purpose in the world can often lead to trouble, which leads us to the next line of our favorite song. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For thou art with me, thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. It is the most beautiful line in the whole psalm, and one of the reasons this psalm has been so closely associated with death. But as much as I love the music of this phrase, the New Revised Standard Version, the one that we read here, the one that we read this morning, is probably a lot more accurate, if not quite as poetic. Even though I walk through the darkest valley, it says. Now, I know you don't like it as much, but it's what the words actually say. It's an affirmation that even in the most difficult, frightening times of life, God is with us. Not just in death, but in the darkest valleys of life. And that is the heart of the psalm. We do not need to fear because God is with us. Now, an interesting thing happens at this point in the psalm. Up until now, the psalmist has referred to God in the third person. But here the psalm directs his address to God. I will fear no evil because you are with me. Not only is this the heart of the psalm in terms of its meaning, it is the literal center of the psalm. You are with me. Nothing can separate us from God's love. Not death, not dark valleys, nothing. The psalm is not saying that God's presence means there will never be dark valleys, troubles, or hard times. This psalm was written instead to give thanks for God's presence in the midst of the dark valley. The psalmist has walked through the valley and has been brought back to life and is celebrating and giving thanks. The psalm does not say, with God there will be no trouble. It's a psalm of trust and thanksgiving for God's presence in the midst of trouble. It conveys a kind of deep faith or trust in God that many of us have seen with our own eyes, the kind of faith that sustains one who's dying, the kind of faith that sometimes seems remarkable to us. This is a psalm for those most challenging times in life, a psalm that reminds us of God's care and sustaining presence. But I hope it can also become a psalm that we turn to in the calmer times of life, when we are experiencing greener pastures and quiet waters, a psalm that we can say in thanksgiving, to remind ourselves of God's goodness in good times as well as in bad. For surely goodness and mercy shall follow me, or even better, pursue me all the days of my life. In the Psalms, it's usually one's enemies who are in pursuit. But in the 23rd Psalm, it is God's goodness and mercy that are pursuing us, relentlessly chasing after us, undeterred. What a wonderful image, I think. God actively pursuing us, not out of wrath or vengeance or judgment, but with goodness and loving kindness. If only we would stop running and let ourselves get caught. Finally, the psalmist reaches the high point of the psalm of thanksgiving. I shall dwell in the house of the Lord my whole life long. Again, the words are different from the ones that we have learned by heart. Isn't it supposed to be, I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever? Well, no, actually, the better translation is for length of days. It's about our life now, not about a hoped-for life to come. As Christians who believe in the resurrection, in a glorious eternity with God, it is understandable that we have learned to interpret this psalm in the light of resurrection. But at the time this psalm was written, there really wasn't a concept in Judaism of a glorious afterlife. The notion of resurrection, of life after death, wasn't a part of Jewish thought until a couple of centuries or so before Jesus was born. And even then, it was disputed among the Jews. This psalm was not about dying and the life that comes after it. It was about living. Living in God's presence and trusting in that presence through every challenge and trial one experiences. The 23rd Psalm will always be there for us when we need it as a psalm to comfort us in the face of death. But my prayer is that we might claim this psalm for our lives here and now and use it as a psalm to live by as well. For the Lord is our shepherd. The Lord gives us everything we need, walks with us through the darkest valleys, and pursues us with his love every moment of our lives. And for that, we can all say thanks.